Tech Talk with Jess Kelly. This is News Talk.
You're very welcome to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll talk through the latest announcement from Sony PlayStation. We finally have details about the PS5. John Reilly will be with us in a little while to talk through what you need to know. Plus, Stephen Douglas, lighting director for the likes of The Killers and Hozier and so many more acts, will join us to talk through what the lockdown period has meant for him and others in his profession. As always, you can email the show techtalk@newstalk.com or you'll find me on Twitter @JessKellyNT. Stephen, you've been on Tech Talk a few times now, and every time that we talk, you're either just back from or about to go off on another world tour with somebody like The Killers or Hozier or any of the other big artists that you've worked with. If we had sat down in January, what was on your agenda for 2020?
The start of the year was actually, I was bizarrely going to take it easy for the first time in a long time. I'd planned on taking about 3 months off when the Hozier tour finished in December. I was going to take kind of January, mid-December through mid-March, April, start of April off. I had some little things in March that were going to happen. And then that would lead into another tour with The Killers, which was, you know, our usual run is 18 months to 2 years on and off. So I'd said, right, I'm going to stay home, have some family time, not go anywhere. And I was in Salt Lake City having production meetings when all this happened. So great timing, take 3 months off right before the entire industry shuts down.
Yeah, and it's so strange because I know your wife. And so for the entire time that I've known your wife, you've either been on tour, coming back from a tour, planning multiple tours at the one time. And it's pretty intense. You know, you could be up in the middle of the night trying to get a quick call with your kids or whatever. So the glamorous side of the life, it's not all it's made up to be. But you do seem to love it. You've been doing it for a long time, correct?
Yeah, I started in this business when I was 17. I blagged my way into a gig in the Olympia and kind of started from there. And I started touring kind of in my mid-20s. So I've been touring for kind of 16, 17 years now. It's a job. It's, you know, it is my job. It is what I've always done. I've only ever had one other job before this. I worked in the supermarket pushing trolleys for a couple of years. Mm. But that's it. This is what I've done my entire life. So
And you've been a big part of
it. Not be able to do it is weird.
Yeah, because I was going to say, anyone who's been to a gig, you know, like whether it is Wyvern Lingo, the Irish band, whether it is Hozier, whether it's The Killers, they've seen your work because you are the person who designs and very often operates the lighting systems that all kind of blow us away when we're in the crowd. So when you were in Salt Lake City and it was kind of, you know, breaking that parts of the world were going to have to shut down, what did that mean? Did you fully understand that, you know, that the life that you've been living for X amount of years was going to change dramatically because suddenly you couldn't be at the Pyramid Stage and Glastonbury setting up for The Killers?
No, we kind of had an inkling of it because obviously, you know, it's been coming for a few months at that point. So we kind of had an idea that it was going to be serious from the way people were talking about it. We never envisioned it was going to be this serious. You know, we were still planning on doing our shows in May. We had a stadium tour of the UK and Ireland and some festivals for May. And we were still planning on doing them up until early April. Wow. You know, late April, we were still hoping, you know, and then obviously lockdowns came and then it's a case of, okay, well, let's see how quickly we can, you know, get back up. And then it became obvious that, okay, well, the stadium tour is going to go, it's going to be pushed by a year, the festivals are going to go now. And then we were aiming for America in August. We thought, okay, we had America booked for, I think it was August through October. And we were hoping that we would be able to go do that. And then that went as well. And then we had some other stuff booked that would have taken us through the Christmas, and then we start again next year. So no, we didn't anticipate it was going to go this long. I think initially, you know, and maybe a little naive, but you know, none of us are medical people, so we don't know what the ins and out of how the virus is and how it works. We're just picking up the news the same as everyone else. So we were hoping, you know, there's all the stories you were getting, you know, well, it's going to be like a flu and it's going to die off in the summer. And, you know, everyone's hoping that that's the case, but, you know, secretly you're knowing in your head, it's like, this is not just like a flu. This is going to affect the industry for a much, much longer time and affect the whole world for a much longer time, obviously, as well.
Yeah, and the nature of it, you know, it's spread person to person. And if you think of you in your little console, you know, front stage at Glastonbury, and all you can see is heads of people going absolutely wild, jumping on top of each other, spitting on top of each other and all the rest, it's no wonder why it had to slow down. But the interesting,
absolutely.
Yeah, the interesting thing from a music side, though, is like you work a lot with the Killers. And so the Killers had an album to bring out. And that's what they were going to tour. The album still came out, but obviously the tour couldn't go ahead. As someone who's been involved in that process for a long, long time, was it weird or was it bittersweet for you to see the album still come out, knowing that the designs that you've drawn up on your computer won't be seen for another while yet?
Yeah, it was very strange because obviously we've been working on the tour since probably last August. We started initial conversations and chats and initial drawings. And, you know, there's a lot of work that goes into, especially a stadium tour where you're having to bring in all your own steel. It's not like an arena or a theater where you just roll in with your production and hang it out of a roof that's already there. Everything has to be custom built, custom designed. We had teams of people working in Belgium and in England and, you know, all over the place, building ideas and trying things and, you know, for what we were attempting to do for the stadium shows. So months and months of work went into it that nobody has seen. And I mean, you know, the shows will happen if they happen the same. I don't know. You know, technology moves and changes and things move and change. We may have to, you know, we may change things. We may not. We're not at that phase yet because obviously we still don't know when we're going to go back to work. Again, we're aiming for those stadium shows in May at the moment, so it was very strange because you sit there and you watch the, you know, the album obviously got delayed by a couple of months. It was supposed to come out in May, it only came out in August. So we just did a couple of live streaming things in Vegas, one on the rooftop of the Caesars Palace, and then a couple for Pandora and one for BBC and one for
was it Stephen Colbert or someone like that? I thought
We did one for Colbert as well.
Yeah.
And then we're doing one that is next Monday for the first home game of the Las Vegas Raiders. They're opening the new stadium, the Allegiant Stadium in Vegas. So, so the band are doing streaming performances like that. So I get to draw those and design them. But obviously with returning home and having to quarantine for 2 weeks and everything, just to go out there for 2 days is not in the best interest. So I have somebody out there who's stepping in and remotely filling in for me behind the console.
So are you still able to work? Because before this activity around the new album started, were you just completely, you know, sitting at home? Was there anything that you could do, or, you know, how did that work? Because the Stephen that I know and I hear about from my friend who you are married to is that you're constantly on the go. God knows what city you're waking up in. God knows what time your next thing is on. You're constantly on the go. So the notion of you being at home, I'd say you found it very odd for that, for this extent of time. It's a long period of time for you to be in one place.
Yeah, I mean, I've been home since, you know, barring we did a one-off show in January and then the meetings in March. Barring those two trips, I've been home since December, which is the longest I've been home in probably 20 years.
So,
longest stretch. I mean, obviously when we're on tour, we're not out on tour for 2 years. We take you know, lots and lots of breaks, and we have weeks off in between tours and legs of tour and stuff like that. So we're not constantly gone for 2 years. I know people have that kind of misconception a little bit as well. They think, oh, he's on tour for 2 years, so we're not going to see him. You know, it's like we do 4 or 5 weeks and then we're home for 10 days or whatever, and then we'll do another few weeks and then we're home, and yeah, so it stays constant that way. So but yeah, it's been an adapting process for sure. But yeah, up until these little streaming things last week, I've had absolutely nothing to do. There's been, and even with those, literally all I do is I draw a little lighting rig on my computer, make some notes for the guy who's filling in for me, and send an email. There you go. That's it. We're done. So it's not massively taxing, but it was nice to have something to do for a few hours each day.
But for someone who's so skilled at what they do, and for someone who's used to, you know, doing this for thousands of people on every night of the week, just on a human level, you know, has your morale gone through sort of waves over the last few months? Because I've spoken to people, you know, friends of mine who work in pubs, who work in restaurants, who work in the tourism industry, and they've been devastated at certain points during this, because the thing that they get out of bed for in the morning is no longer there. So they, like, what do you get out of bed for in the morning almost, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think everyone in these industries, and mine, and like you just said, all those industries you just mentioned as well, have been out of work for a long time. I think everyone does, you know. If your job is something that you enjoy and you can't do it anymore, then obviously it's going to have an impact on you. I think it kind of comes around harder when you find out what the next thing is. Like, okay, well, here's the next set of regulations, and you know, or you see, a couple of weeks ago I saw Andrew Lloyd Webber put up a video from London, and he was outside the Majesty's Theatre, which is where Phantom of the Opera has been residence in 1986, and he walked in the stage door, and not only is the theatre empty, but the entire show has loaded out, and it's the first time they've removed that show since 1986. Wow. Because they're not sure if Phantom of the Opera will ever reopen yet. Yeah, and that's a bizarre thing, you know, to see the video of that stage empty for the first time since 1986, with no props, no set, no scenery, no lights, nothing, just an empty shell of a stage. So that was a weird one to see. And yeah, and then obviously there's the touchstones throughout the year where you see, okay, Glastonbury's cancelled, Coachella gets postponed. Coachella is supposed to be next month. I assume it's already been cancelled again. I haven't even been keeping up on that. You know, obviously over here we've got Electric Picnic and Independence and Sea Sessions, and you know, all the festivals around the country, and even gigs and stuff that you were looking forward to going to see. Like, I had stuff booked to go to this year, and I've already had some shows that have been rescheduled twice on Ticketmaster, and now they're, you know, later next year, because they got rescheduled from March, April time till now, and now they've been rescheduled from now to next year. And yeah, you know, you're just looking at things going, oh god, is that one even going to happen? Or, you know, in cinemas as well, you know, I mean, basically everything that I enjoy doing involves crowds of people. Yeah. Whether it be gigs or cinemas or going to football, or, you know.
Yeah. And it's strange because I walk by the Gaiety Theatre every day coming into work. And so I go from the Lewis to this office, News Talk's office. And it's so strange because initially when this all started to happen, the city was on lockdown, but we were still coming in because we're essential workers. And yep, the posters for the shows that were due to be on were up. And then all of a sudden, a few months down the line, there was like rescheduled dates. And now cancelled and rescheduled. And now what's up outside the Gaiety is really like emotional pictures of the Gaiety, and it says the show will go on and this is not the final curtain. And I kind of do get a bit emotional because, like that, I am someone, I would go to a live gig every day of the week if I could. I love going to the theatre. I just think that's a key part of what we do and what we are as a country. And so to think of all the people that, you know, work to make those productions that I kind of took for granted because we'd go to them so often are now struggling because there hasn't been enough done. There's not enough supports. It's just not good enough. And a lot of people would have seen a fair bit of action, a fair bit of activity on social media this week. The hashtag This Is Who We Are, encouraging people to write to their TD. Tell us a little bit about that and tell us what has been done and what needs to be done to back the people who've entertained us for so many years.
Well, that was started in, I think it was starting around May. I'm not actually directly involved with it, so excuse me if I'm hazy on the facts or get any of them wrong. There's a couple of different organizations who are all working together as well, but the main one I've been keeping my eye on is the EPIC, which is the Event Production Industry COVID Working Group. So I think that was established around May, and it's got people like Sophie Ridley, who was, you know, she looked after all the health and safety for all the big gigs. And I mean, even that's something that people don't think about. Like, there has to be a person who oversees all the health and safety. You don't just throw up a fence and say, well, that's the boundary line. Mm. You know, so you've got Sophie's involved, Pierce Doherty, who's an event producer, Shane Dunn from the Epic Work Group. He's, you know, one of the chairs of the Epic Work Group. He is involved with Independence. Mort Whelan from Mort Whelan Sound down in Limerick. Brian Spallin from MCD, Justin Green. All these people got involved to try and give us something of a voice for the self-employed people and the small business owners as well. Because there is so many of them. I mean, there's, you know, in excess of 25 to 30 something thousand people who work in this business. So, yeah, I think it all kind of kick-started when the Blizzards and Brezzy and Events Act got together and they started the We Are the Support Act thing. And the way they were selling T-shirts to start a hardship fund for crew. But again, no matter how generous people are, there's never going to be enough because there's so many people involved. You know, there's so many people working in the business. So if it can hopefully go to help the people who are, you know, the people who are in real trouble of missing their rent payment or missing their car payment or whatever, you know, then I think that's where that money will end up going. And the songs from the Empty Room thing they had in the Olympia was another lead on from that. And, you know, a lot of great artists gave their time for free for that as well. And all the crew gave their time for free and everything. So, and obviously U2 made a very generous donation to that fund, a couple hundred thousand, I believe. Mm-hmm. Really bumped up the number, which was great. So yeah, it's just about getting the word out there that, you know, we have a massive workforce in this country who've built up skill over time to get Ireland to the point where we can stage major concerts for huge bands, that you don't need to bring in all your production from the UK. You don't need, you know, we've had many stadium shows in the Aviva and Slane that have been fully furnished by local providers, local crew, local everything, and the artist just arrives in and plays their show, you know, because maybe they're not on tour, it's a one-off. And 20 years ago, we wouldn't have had that. 20, 25 years ago, we would be bringing in entire productions from the UK because we just didn't have the resources here to do that. So that has all been built up over time. And yeah, I mean, if, you know, it would be a real shame if it became a case of those people all having to leave the business, leave the industry to go and make ends meet. And, you know, you would still hope that people would come back to the business, you know, when we can go back to work. But again, it's the unknown. And if people go off and find another job that they like, and decide to move on, then it's, you know, it'll be tough. We could end up losing a lot of people. And, you know, every day I see on various forums and groups that we're on Facebook, I see different companies in the UK shutting down their warehouses, closing permanently, you know, and major companies who've been around for a long time, just putting all their gear in storage and having to sell off their warehouse and, you know, do things like that. So it is tough. And, you know, we're a small country, but we've a lot of very good people here. I mean, we've got people who've toured all over the world with massive bands. We've got Emmy award winning production people in this country, and, you know, multiple other award winners as well. Mm. It's so yeah, for a small country, we do punch above our weight when it comes to this sort of thing. So yeah, it is just about getting the word out that this is not just a hobby. You know, this is not something we do at the weekend or something we do in the summer when we want to hang out in a field and watch some bands. You know, this is something we do 24/7 all year round. You know, it is a real career.
Yeah. And as you said, we have so many talented people here that if anyone listening to this can do anything to support, please do, because I know myself, I am missing live gigs. I bought my first tickets for a gig since lockdown. I bought everything tickets. They're playing, yes, I think it's in next February it's due to be on. And I am just holding on to those tickets, you know, desperate and praying that it goes ahead. Because yeah, it's a huge source of entertainment. It's a huge, you know, release for those of us who work less exciting jobs than yourself, who just need a gig to go to and somewhere to hang out. When we talk about the return to work for our events staff and production staff around the country and around the world, indeed, what's the talk? What's the thought? Can you see yourself going back to your console in a field?
I have no idea.
You've no idea.
I really have no idea. You know, like I said, when it started out, you were thinking, oh, this will be a couple of months, and then, yeah, then it'll be another couple of months, and here we are. It's been, you know, it's been 6 months. The last show, the last paid gig that I did was in January.
Gosh.
So that was the last paid gig I did, was end of January. Yeah, I did one as a favor in March, just for a little charity thing for a friend.
Mm.
But yeah, so it's, you know, and again, the first couple of months of that intentionally were my own choice. I could have worked January, February, March if I wanted to before all this started, but I decided to have some time off because of, you know, having had a few tours in the years before that just run into one into another. I decided I want to take a few months off, be home, hang out with the kids, you know, and just be normal for a change.
Yeah.
But yeah, now I really don't know. We're waiting on guidance. You know, there doesn't seem to be any guidance in this new five level thing that they've released the other day. There's no real light at the end of the tunnel that I can see. I mean, I'm sure the people who are involved with Epic and with the other work groups are probably having conversations with government people they'll be more privy to more information than I would be. But just as a member of the public, I don't see in those levels where we can get back to having even 6,000, 7,000 people in the three arena, you know, 50% capacity. Yeah, I don't see anywhere on that, you know, but you hope it'll be revised and that things will be taken into account, but who knows, you know. I think we will find a lot of people will just be going off now and looking for other jobs. And I mean, I don't think everyone in our business is very hardworking. You know, we're all hardworking people. Any of us is saying that we don't want to work. We absolutely do want to work. But there's also a lack of jobs out there now as well. And, you know, because people don't understand our industry as much as a regular, you know, an everyday business, they maybe don't see that our skills and our talents are transferable. Because if I was to go for a job in retail, they're not going to look at me until they've looked at everybody else who has had retail experience or, you know, customer service experience or whatever in the last 20 years. Whereas, you know, this guy's just been swanning around the world with bands for this long, you know, and I understand that, you know, as an employer, I would see their point of view as well. So I think finding jobs is going to be tough as well.
Yeah, we'll keep our fingers crossed that something comes out, whether it is guidelines to get gigs back or whether it is proper supports for people like yourself who are so incredibly talented at what they do and unable to work, because it will be such a shame to see some of the brilliant staff that we have leaving the industry, because God knows what impact that would have on the overall gig going experience once it eventually does come back. But Stephen, thank you so much for your time, and I really do hope that I get to see your work in person, in a field, in a stadium, in an arena, God knows where, but somewhere in the near future. Yeah, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Jess.
Coming up next, all you need to know about the PS5.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
TechTalk@newstalk.com is the email address if you do have any questions or comments. And we're going to talk about gaming once again this week. Last week, John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, was on with us talking about what we know about Xbox after they confirmed pricing and availability. PlayStation, Sony obviously were listening to the show last week and they decided they need to get information to Tech Talk too. So thankfully, on Wednesday evening, they held a press event that was streamed online. And it was very, very exciting. So John is with us once again. John, how are you?
I'm good, Jess. How are you?
I'm good. I watched this and I was more excited by this than I was the Xbox one. And I can't explain it. Maybe it was the Harry Potter references. I don't know. But I was into this one.
Yeah. And I was saying the same to my girlfriend. I was watching it. And I was like, there was a buzz around it because Sony are so good at keeping their leaks and their kind of their information under wraps, basically. So meaning there is no leaks. So you kind of, everything you're seeing, you know, the world is watching along, seeing it for the first time also. So there was a lot of excitement and, you know, they didn't confirm before the show when they announced it last Saturday, I think it was, that the show was going to happen on Wednesday. They didn't say that the price and the launch dates were going to be announced, but everyone was like, if it's not done now, it's game over really. So we all were kind of had that hope by one of those one more thing moments that at the end we were finally going to get it. And we did. We got both the prices and the launch dates for the new consoles.
Yeah, it's very exciting. And they did it in a very useful way. I was really impressed by the press conference, which I know is a bit pathetic, but there you are. So we now know that the PlayStation 5 will be $499.99 and the PlayStation 5 Digital Edition will be $399.99. So 100 quid in the difference. And they will be available in Ireland November 19th. Isn't that correct?
That's correct. Yeah, there is a couple of countries like the US, Canada, Korea, if I remember, New Zealand, a handful that will get it a week earlier, probably just with logistics of delivery and whatnot. I'm not necessarily sure. They haven't come out and said why, but then the rest of the world basically can expect it on the 19th of November. So just 1 week later.
So just in time for Santa, basically, is what they're saying.
Yes, basically. Like, yeah, it makes sense.
Yeah, they're very clever, those people. Okay, so let's do what we did with Xbox. Let's talk through the differences between... Let's go even more scrape back than that, because I've had a few people on to me on Twitter. They were on to me on Thursday morning saying, can you just explain in plain English what is the difference between a PlayStation and an Xbox, and then what is the difference between the two versions of the PS5? So let's start with the first question. What is the key difference between an Xbox and a PS5? Is it kind of like an iPhone and Android phone?
To a certain extent, yes. This is the more complicated one and a bit more kind of complex question, because technically it'll be like the current generation where, yes, you'll get games that'll be playable on both, but then each will have their own exclusives that you'll only be able to play on either console, and that's kind of where the money is and where people kind of show their allegiances. In terms of their processing power, I think on paper, the top-of-the-line Xbox Series X is, inverted commas, technically more powerful than what the PS5 can do when you're looking at teraflops and all the kind of CPU usage and whatnot and that kind of thing. You can get into the nitty-gritty, but really we know at the end of the day that sometimes even though a less powerful console can actually make a game look better because it's been so well refined to kind of use the best from that specific console. So it's kind of a dead argument sometimes when you kind of put the specs side by side. Yes, as I said, there'll be exclusives on PlayStation that you can't play on Xbox.
And what kind of titles are they, John? Because this is where, you know, if a parent were to come home, the day that one of the consoles launches and brought home the other one, the one that the child doesn't use or that the person doesn't want to play the game on, that could be quite devastating. So it's not just like, sure, anyone will do. So what kind of titles are exclusive and who are they exclusive to?
Well, for the likes of the... So with the Xbox... Unfortunately, their big flagship one that was meant to launch with the console this Christmas, Halo, which any Xbox gamer, any gamer in general would kind of know is one of the biggest franchises that you can only really play on Xbox/PC, which is obviously a Microsoft ecosystem, so it's, you know, seen as the same thing. But you can't play Halo on PlayStation 5, or you've never been able to play it on a PlayStation console ever. But that now has been delayed, unfortunately, to the new year, so that the Xbox doesn't have its bells and whistles massive blockbuster title launching this Christmas. So it quickly comes down to lesser titles that, again, haven't really been confirmed as launch titles as of yet. There's kind of like third party ones called The Medium. It's kind of like this creepy psychological thriller game that will be an exclusive on the Xbox, but it's not going to be selling hundreds of millions of consoles because it's a lesser known brand as such. So when it comes to this Christmas, really, between the Xbox and PS5, I think PS5 definitely will have the edge with their exclusive titles. They've got that new Spider-Man game you saw the show. There was like 7-minute gameplay, which looked amazing. But saying that, the interesting thing that we learned last night, as I've said previously on the show, that Spider-Man game is only going to be on PS5. If you want to play the latest version of the Spider-Man game, you're going to have to buy the console. They confirmed last night that title will actually be available on the PS4 also.
Ooh.
Be it with lesser graphics, lesser bells and whistles, it won't look as pretty. But they came out last night saying that launch title, which we all thought was going to be the biggest console seller for the PS5, will also be available to the 110 million PS4 owners. So that's quite the interesting turn of events to kind of...
That's a big deal. Like, that is big for people.
Yeah. So it's good marketing. Like, they weren't going to just kind of turn away from 110 million people. Well, not to say that every PlayStation 4 owner was going to buy the game, but that's a huge market they weren't going to say no to, seeing as they saw how successful the first Spider-Man game from 2018 was on the PS4. So yeah, that's a huge deal for gamers that just weren't ready to make the jump this Christmas, but really wanted to have a bit of the Spider-Man action. So they're doing that with another title. I don't know if you're aware of it. It's Horizon. It came out maybe 3 years ago now, one of the kind of flagship PS4 exclusive titles.
Mm-hmm.
That sequel is coming out next year, and it's called Forbidden West. It looks spectacular. But again, they confirmed that even into next year, there'll be titles, exclusive titles coming to both the PS5 and PS4. So it's kind of looking after their gamers, like I said, Xbox were doing with their cross-generational titles. So it makes marketing sense for them.
Yeah, it does. But I like when it's not just gouging, and it's not just like, you know, if you are a proper gamer, you will buy a new console every single time one comes out. Because I think a lot of us, and we were talking about refurbished phones with Colin Baker on last week's show, I do think a lot of us are more mindful now about the wastage and the fact that, you know, I'm very guilty of it in the past, of just upgrading and updating hardware because it was available. You know what I mean? I think we're all, a lot of us are being a bit more mindful, I suppose, about what we buy. And if we can get longer out of different devices, then why the hell wouldn't you? Like, nobody wants to be throwing money away. Nobody wants to be leaving consoles sitting on a shelf just waiting to rot and then go to the landfill. So I think it's actually, it goes beyond just being sound. It's also just being more socially aware as well, I think.
Yeah, no, exactly. And like, I guess for gamers, in terms of, we don't thankfully have the yearly cyclical updates, it just wouldn't be feasible, like we do with phones and what other, you know, earphone, any other kind of tech product. Thankfully, consoles have been lasting 5, 6, 7 years. You know, people would have bought the original PlayStation 4 when it came out in 2013, and now they're kind of really eagerly, you know, anticipating the PS5 after 7 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a nice kind of window to kind of have saved up whatever your funds were and just to get excited for the new games on the console. But yeah, you don't have to make the leap this Christmas if you don't want to, which is for specific games like Spider-Man and that. So it's really good for consumers as well in that way.
Yeah, I thought that I was going to buy the digital Xbox. And then when I was watching the PlayStation thing last night, I was like, I think I probably want a PlayStation instead. What are the difference between the two devices?
Well, this is a lot more of a straightforward question because, as I said, as we spoke last week, the two Xboxes, there's quite a few little bits that kind of would you know, you need to be aware of if you're making that decision. But for the PlayStation 5s, they're identical apart from one just doesn't have the 4K UHD Blu-ray player. So you just won't be able to, and which basically will let you can't buy disc versions of games. Like, you wouldn't be able to walk into a shop and buy the newest Call of Duty on disc and walk and bring it home because there's no disc drive to put it into, basically. Memory is the same size. It's a bit of a strange 825 gigabits.
Random figure.
Of storage. Random figure, yes. I think it is a terabyte, but the 175 gigs that are missing off the terabyte are used kind of for internal RAM and internal storage and whatnot. So,
but at least they're upfront about that, though, because I don't like when they say, you know,
it's a
like
1 terabyte device. Yeah.
Yeah. Apple are snakes for that. I remember a few years ago buying, I think it was a 64 gig phone or iPod or something, and your 8 of them were taken up with the operating system. So you're like, ah, here.
Cowboys, yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so that's not a massive difference then. And I think once you acknowledge that you're not going to be able to put physical discs in, and then you won't have the 4K functionality, but will it do the same upscaling thing that the Xbox will do?
Well, the thing is, in terms of the processing power, for both of the PlayStation 5 models, they're exactly the same. So both will push even 8K gaming. There will be, there is no, as I said, the only thing is that you don't have the disk drive. Everything else is identical. So you'll have the same processing power. You're going to get 4K, 120 frames per second. It's going to be all the bells and whistles on both platforms. So there's no trade-offs being done here apart from the disk drive. So yeah. It's purely for people that don't see, are more digitally inclined in terms of they have the broadband to download the games, and they don't really care for a secondhand kind of games market where they're not people that buy a game, play it, and trade it in to make a bit of money back. It gives people that option, and it's for 100 quid less. So
yeah,
it's really people's preference how they game or how they play.
Yeah, I think that because I have been thinking about it quite a bit, and I do think I will go for the digital, like the one without the disc drive in it. I think that's the one that I'd go for, because I always kind of say, oh yeah, no, I will. I'll go and buy that game. And then something will happen, and then I'll have a day off, or it'll be a Saturday, and I'll be like, oh, I don't want to leave the house, but I want to play it, so I'll just download it.
Yeah.
And I also find that the games, and maybe this is just a Jess's crazy thing, but I find the games that I do have the physical copies for, anytime I contemplate going and trading them in, I'm like, oh, but I might want to go back to it. Like, I'm not good at letting things go, so I may as well just have the digital file.
I'm the exact same. I'd be more just the convenience aspect of being able to go, do you know what? I've seen a lot of good reviews about that. I want to jump in and play it, and I've got decent broadband. So I pop onto the store, buy the title, and I'm playing it in a couple of hours, if even. So rather than having to trek into town and pick it up in a store. Yes, that's unfortunate for the physical gaming stores. And look, we're in 2020 now, and both next-gen consoles have launched all digital versions with no disc drive. So it's the beginning of the end, unfortunately, in terms of that market or that whole industry of disc-based gaming. But yes, there is the option for both of them to have the disc drives as well. So people that want to continue that secondhand trade-in system and kind of prefer to be able to switch games with their friends when they're done with them, that option is there too. But it's going to cost you more.
Do you think it will be the beginning of the end, or will it not be like music, where although we did lose like HMV and Golden Discs, they kind of came back after a while because there are people who are that love the physical copies?
It's going to become more niche, I guess. Like, you know, I guess vinyl had a resurgence and still is having a resurgence because people want the authentic sound. But a disc is a disc. A game is a game. It's just digital code at the end of the day. And a lot of the time when you go into a store and buy a game anyways, you come home, you have to download a 40 gig update or something insane. Mm. So it's all digital anyways. The disc is just kind of to show that you own it more than anything, rather than, you know, you're going to install the disc onto the device anyways. So you're basically getting the digital code, but you just bought a disc to do it. So it's kind of becoming a bit negligible unless you do like to trade in and swap with your friends and whatnot, why you'd aim for discs.
All right, John, stay where you are, because I have to take a quick break. But when we come back, we might talk about if you had to buy, if you could only buy one, what would you go for? A quick reminder, the email address is techtalk@newstalk.com. We'll be back right after this.
Tech Talk. Tech Talk. Rate and subscribe.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. The email address is techtalk@newstalk.com. And John Riley, editor of TheEffect.net, is still with me. We're talking about the PlayStation 5 press conference that was on Wednesday night. I know it's still a lot of money, but when I saw the €400 figure for the digital one, I was like, that's actually not too bad. I kind of had it in my head, and I don't know where it came from, but I kind of had it in my head that these were going to be more expensive than they are.
Well, we don't know. I don't think it's been confirmed yet in terms of what kind of loss Sony are making, because, like, I think with any generational console, the manufacturers goal is to get it under your TV, and then they make the money off the games that you buy for that console. Rather, so they'll always somewhat be selling them at a loss. But yeah, the $399 for the digital version is a really decent price. When the PS4 launched in 2013, it came in at that price. It had a Blu-ray player in it, and it undercut the Xbox back in the day by £100, because I think Xbox were bundling the Kinect camera in. You had no option to buy it without the Kinect, so it was £100 dearer, and people were like, nah, I'm fine, thanks, I don't need the Kinect. So everyone kind of swayed over towards the PS4. So with the $399 this year, and then obviously $499 is a bit more expensive with the disc drive, they're still very good prices, because I think Sony have been petrified to go back to the day of the PS3 when that came out at like $599, and it was a monster of a thing. And I think it was 2006, and people were like, what are you guys doing? Mm. They were like forcing a Blu-ray player on everyone that didn't want it. They just wanted to play games, and the price just scared a lot of people away. So they were burnt back then, and I think they've learned their lesson now. So the $399, $499 are really good kind of price points for what you're getting.
Yeah, we've spoken a few times now about sort of cloud-based gaming and how that's going to work. And I just wonder, is that the way it's going to go? Like, could this realistically be the last generation of the physical consoles that we have and that there's hype about? And will it be a case that it'll all be software-based going forward?
That's a great question, and that's what people are kind of theorizing. They're imagining, like, if we go the 7-year cycle again, like we have from the last generation, where the hell are we going to be in 7 years with consoles? Is it going to be a tiny device you plug into your TV and you stream every PS6 game from the cloud? Like you said, it's totally feasible, and it's totally something that could happen. People are, like, as I said, it may not be the end of the actual hardware device itself. It could be just the next generation are all digital only. So you'll still pick up a box like the digital versions we have now with the PS5 and the Xbox Series S, but you're going to be streaming with that device more so than you're going to actually be downloading games onto it. But nobody knows. I think with whatever the sales are for these new consoles, it's going to tell a lot about the way the industry is going to go. So if they sell 2-to-1 in terms of digital, they're going to realize that people are done with discs. So they're going to put their eggs in that basket. But it all depends on what the sales are, I'd imagine.
And if that were to happen, and even if the sale of the digital games consoles, the digital-only consoles, goes through the roof, does that mean that they're all going to bump up their prices and suddenly we're going to be paying a hell of a lot more for a digital copy versus physical copy?
God, that sounds very, very bad, but I really hope it doesn't come to that. I guess with this new generation, Sony have kind of started confirming that, be it digital or in store, that games are going to be about €80 a pop now rather than the €70 premium. Mm-hmm. So they're gone up a tenner. So either you go into GameStop in town or you go on to the store and you're going to be buying the latest Call of Duty for at least €80. So they can't really go up anymore in the next couple of years just because people are going digital. And people are going to rightfully push back because there's no production costs. Obviously, a code is a code, or a bit of digital code is, you're not paying for storage or for distribution or for packaging. So
yeah, but what you are paying for is you're paying for your broadband and for your time, because some of these games can take ages to download. And so that's why, I think I said it to you a few weeks ago, I don't understand why the digital copies aren't significantly cheaper.
I think when we did speak about that, I was talking about the fact that they don't want to screw
undercut
over
themselves. Yeah. No, I get that.
Well, more so, and the fact like that the resellers, or the whole like GameStops and Smiths, and if they start selling their games cheaper on their platforms, on digital platforms, GameStop are like, I'm not going to stock your game if you're going to undercut me on your own store. So we have to be, there has to be price parity. Otherwise, you're completely screwing me over. Why would anyone come in and buy it off me when you're selling it for £20 less? So I think it's purely to keep them on side so they can make a sale both in store and online at the same price. Otherwise, that's in the foot.
And I do get it. I just feel that we, the consumer, need to be eyes wide open at the moment, because there's, I don't know, I just feel, and I think I've said it to you before, but when I look at my bank statement every month and I see the number of subscriptions I'm paying out for different services, and then you are paying for your broadband, and then you're paying for this, that, and the other, it all adds up. And I just think that we need to make sure that, you know, the convenience factor isn't being sold to us as worth more than our time or our money, because we're all working hard for our money. Do you know that way? And I just think, I just think that big business is kind of still pulling a lot of the strings when we need to realize that we actually have a fair bit of power as well.
Yeah, in terms of consumer sway, exactly. It's kind of, there's, I don't know, boycotts are very extreme, but if people aren't happy with ways, the ways games are being launched and the fees they're charging, people, you'd like to imagine, just won't buy them, and it'll burn them, that they'll hopefully learn that we can't screw them over that much. We can't push it too far that people are going to turn people against our brand, against our kind of our marketing approach. So it's really going to be the power of the people that are going to kind of teach the lessons to these big corp, you know, to the big gaming giants. Kind of, there was issues of, you know, EA, unfortunately, got many slaps on the wrist for their microtransactions in a lot of their games. That was almost like mini gambling sessions for big titles like Star Wars and whatnot. So that did really, really come back against the bite, you know, against them, and bit them in the arse, that they had to completely change their approach. And I think the industry as a whole learned from that. So, you know, we do have enough sway to make them readjust or reevaluate the way they're kind of selling things to us. So I hope it continues.
Let's talk very briefly about the Harry Potter game, because I saw that and I nearly wet myself with excitement. I was like, oh my God, this is as if it was tailor made for me. Put Harry Potter on anything and you are sold. Like, I am just there and I'm fully in. So what is coming down the tracks?
So yes, it's a game that has actually been leaked a small bit over the months, and it's from Warner Brothers, the studio behind the movies, obviously. That it's called Hogwarts Legacy. So it's based in the 1800s. It's like this all new virtual Hogwarts world, or kind of wizarding world. Surprisingly, or not surprisingly, that you mentioned the word Harry, or you're calling it the Harry Potter game, but there's no mention of him in any of the marketing as such. You know, yes, I was speaking last night about it. And I said, that's ghastly, because I didn't even, you just automatically go Harry Potter, but it's actually, there's, you know, Hermione's not in this, Harry's not in this, none of the characters, you know, it's, they said it's 200 years before any of that, you know, ever came to light. So this is kind of your take as an unknown wizard, you know, joining the classes of Hogwarts and kind of learning your way with the wand and whatever it may be. And it's going to be coming to next gen next year in 2021, and also to the current gen consoles as well. So you're not going to be played out of the market there either, which is really good to know.
I am so excited by it. And the bit of gameplay that I saw, the bit that they showed anyway, looked fantastic.
Yeah.
It looked beautiful. There was a few other titles that I didn't really recognize, or maybe I'm just thick, but like I didn't, the different sort of trailer videos or whatever it was that they showed, I was like, okay, I don't really know what these are. Was there anything that kind of caught your eye that got you excited about it?
Yeah, well, there was some that were kind of curveballs, and I was like, where are they going with this? But I kind of did a summary post on the website last night capturing all those trailers. And as I said, Spider-Man looked amazing. Final Fantasy is one of the biggest gaming franchises in the world, and they announced the 16th installment of that. So that is going to sell the console in itself. I think it's like a timed launch exclusive. So it'll be launching next year, and you'll only be able to play it on PlayStation 5 for, say, a year period or whatever. They haven't confirmed how long that would be. You've got your Call of Duties. You've got your Hogwarts, Resident Evil, another huge franchise. Fortnite's coming to it. There was Oddworld, which was kind of an odd one. People from the PlayStation 1 days might remember Oddworld and Abe's Odyssey and all those kind of, like, they were groundbreaking in their time. So it's nice to see that kind of hark back to the original PS1 days.
Was that the one with the kind of troll-looking things? What was the
That was Oddworld Soulstorm. So that was like where you're kind of like Lemmings, but a bit more darker than the Lemmings game of old, where you're kind of controlling or trying to save these inhabitants of this planet. But yeah, that was the kind of strange looking one. And you had a little bit of a brief intro from the creative director at the studio.
Yeah.
But that was all the way back to the original PlayStation 1 days. So, you know, gamers of that, I know my brother was a big, big fan. He's excited to see that come again. Yeah, and then, but there's Five Nights at Freddy's. I think we might have spoke about this many years ago. It might have been on one of the other shows on News Talk about, this is a controversial game about, it's very dark. It's very kind of like just a disturbing game almost. And it's the fact it got such prominence last night was a bit of a surprise for a lot of people.
Why? What's the controversy?
It's a horror game, but you're like, I have never played them, to be quite honest, but it's very kind of like graphic, and like, but you play a teddy bear, or it's almost like it's for kids, but then when you look at it, when the second you kind of lift the covers, you're like, oh no, this is incredibly dark and it's quite graphic. So it's one to be cautious of if you are a parent, that you saw it last night, if you were watching it, or if your kids were talking about it, that it's just one to kind of watch with a careful eye just in case.
Okay, so we now have information about the new Xboxes, the new PS5s. Can you pre-order from now, or what's the story there?
Yes, so they kind of last night they pulled the rug from under a lot of people and said, look, pre-orders have gone live. I saw GameStop Ireland anyways were tweeting, you know, pre-orders are open right now. And they tweeted quickly after saying that their first allotment of consoles have completely been pre-ordered out or sold out.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's a huge demand. So I think you just have to keep your eye on your inbox, sign up to their newsletters or sign up to their kind of mailing list, so they let you know when there's a new batch in, basically. For the Xbox, pre-orders for both consoles are launching on the 22nd of September, if I remember correctly. So a couple more days to go yet. And then they'll be launching November 10th for the Xboxes and November 19th for the PS5s. So not long to wait at all.
I'm very excited. I do still think, and this could change a million and one times, but I do think I will go for a PS5. I'm not getting both of them, that's for sure.
I think I will.
You'll get both?
Yeah, just that I can't see other people. It's such an issue. It's not even an issue. It's ridiculous. I don't need to buy both, but I want to play games on both that I can't play on either. So, you know, I want to play what's on Xbox that I can't play on PlayStation, and I want to play what's on PlayStation that I can't play on Xbox. So it only happens every 7 years. So I don't mind splashing out.
You can call it research for Tech Talk if your girlfriend asks.
Website. It's for Tech Talk. yes.
Okay.
So we
need to help John through this. If you have any titles that you want to hear reviews of on the new consoles, let us know. And as soon as they become available, we'll set John to work and we will get reviews. Also, if you have any questions about any console, not just the new consoles, any console or any games, or if you want recommendations, email techtalk@newstalk.com, and John Riley, editor of theeffect.net, will answer them. Also, if you want to read his full review or rundown of that press event, the website again is theeffect.net. John, as always, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Jess.